CliffCentral.com. Love it. David Bowie with Fame. Tuesday morning. It's the 11th of February already. CliffCentral.com. We got Pumi here. We got Sia. We got Mbulelo. We got you. And we'll take your thoughts, calls, ideas, messages, whatever it is you want to send us on 0797482090. Let us know what's up. Ooh, okay. So we were talking coronavirus just a minute ago, but that's not something which is on most people's minds. Most people are thinking about day-to-day stuff.
Valentine's Day.
Valentine's Day, right?
And also you mentioned the 11th of Feb. Can you believe it's also been today is exactly 30 years since Nelson Mandela's release?
Oh, really?
From prison, yeah.
3-0. Oh, well, of course it would have, yeah. It would have been 1990. Wow. It is scary to think that it's 30 years since 1990.
Zinzi posted this morning, so somebody on Twitter posted the picture, the very famous picture of Winnie and Nelson walking out of Victor Verster, and asked Zinzi if she remembers where she was on the day, and she responded on Twitter to say she was actually there with Zoleka and Pambata and they were babies obviously back then, and how excited they all were to see, and she helped him write the speech that he gave. And as we all know now, right, that he forgot his glasses, so he borrowed Winnie's glasses. So the glasses he's wearing to read the speech are Winnie's glasses.
The one that he read from the Cape Town.
From the balcony.
Balcony, yeah.
Yeah.
City Hall
balcony. She helped him write the speech.
Wow.
And Winnie gave the glasses.
That's actually cute.
Yeah, this is what you learn about history, is just that these little stories that go along with the stories are sometimes the most interesting ones. And everybody thinks it's all well planned. Like, all of history is just these incredibly well executed plans that many people have sat in rooms for days and days trying to organize. Sometimes history is just what happens in the moment.
Yeah. So understandably, there'll be a lot of celebrations and events of commemoration around the country today. So the Nelson Mandela Foundation, one of the events that the foundation is hosting this morning is a reunion of the original members who were in the reception committee that welcomed Madiba as he was leaving prison. And President Ramaphosa is also expected to give an address from Cape Town City Hall's balcony, where Mandela first gave his speech after his release from prison. He's expected to give the speech at 2:30 or somewhere between 2:30 and 4:30. And he even highlighted the speech, though, in this week's newsletter, which none of us still are subscribed to. Yeah, this week.
And listen, isn't he doing the State of the Nation address soon?
On Thursday, yeah. So in his
anybody going to watch that?
Nah.
Right. So in his newsletter, he said, while the country's democracy was well entrenched with robust and durable institutions and the lives of people had improved over the past 25 years since the first democratic elections, more needed to be done. He says, yet there's so much further we need to travel. Inequality, especially as defined by race and gender, remains amongst the highest in the world. So I guess we'll see something, or we'll hear something along the lines of this a little later on today. But the Tutus are also commemorating Madiba. They're paying tribute to him, saying, while circumstances and priorities changed over time, good values were timeless. And that's exactly what Madiba stood for. Hmm. That's sweet.
Okay. 30 years, unbelievable! All right, there's.
Can you believe it? Can
you don't care, Pums?
Wait, where Gareth has told us where he was, and he remembers that he was watching it on TV. Do you remember where you were?
Yeah, watching it on TV. Remember, so you know then, and also as an 11-year-old, right? You had to there was nobody on the streets. Because everybody was waiting for this moment, and it was delayed, so parents had it on, and people Mandela was a myth, right? So nobody had seen a picture of this guy for.
Everybody would just wanted to know what he looked
and
like.
And he was a myth. And in Soweto, obviously, for us, and we live quite close to Mama Winnie. So she's not, she's like two suburbs away from where we live. Everybody knows Winnie and everybody knows and loves her for who she is and all of the craziness and, you know, well, and other people hate her for the same reasons.
Mm-hmm.
It's true, Mulelo.
Sure. I'll take your word for it.
So that day, everybody was just waiting to see this guy walk out of that prison. And it was delayed and delayed, and all the parents had more of an expectation than we did. But there was such a big expectation, you couldn't be out in the street playing. You had to be home to see this momentous thing, right?
And people were also a bit nervous because there was so much expectation around who Nelson Mandela was and what he would do and what it would mean. I mean, I remember just being fascinated because I was a kid. But I remember being fascinated with the idea that this guy hadn't been seen in so long. We didn't know what he looked like.
And there was no Google image back then. Yes,
no,
there might have been
pictures.
A poster here.
There were pictures
there.
Of him when he went into jail, and that was it.
Mm.
There was nothing. So for
and he was a young man then.
7 years. We had no idea how he'd changed.
Mm. And
people weren't allowed to have images of this man.
Yeah,
so
it's considered dangerous.
There was no... And remember that the man that went into prison was actually also quite a bit of a radical. You know, he was a lion. He had fight in him. So that's the other thing that people were waiting to see. What does his coming out of prison come with?
Mm.
So there was lots of anxiety. There was lots of anxiety about what it meant. There was lots of fear. People were like stockpiling baked beans.
Really?
It's not just
like
in
there
Spud.
Could be an impending.
Yeah.
It's not
war
just in Spud that people were like stockpiling.
No, really.
People were really stockpiling stuff because they just thought this guy and his radical views. Remember, this is also a guy who, by any means necessary, freedom in our lifetime, by any means necessary. So people were. There was lots of anxiety. How would everybody's lives change? And knowing that on the rest of the continent, there had never been a peaceful transition.
South
power,
Africa really
right?
is a marvel, hey?
They had never... So almost universally on the continent, any kind of regime change came with civil war, came with real kind of like fighting and guns in the streets. So people were scared.
It's also very stunning to me how young kids were so well aware of what was happening in the country. Of course, you had to be because it directly affected you. But, you know, I'm thinking 7, 8, 9 years old, you knew about this political figure and you had heard about him. Nowadays, 7, 8, 9 years old, you're like, role model is Ben 10 and that's all you know.
Well, I don't know.
Look, I know I'm generalizing, but look at how much can change in 30 years.
So, I mean, also understanding that the overwhelming sense of people's lives back then was about the political situation. So there was no way...
You couldn't escape it.
There was no way that you could shield kids from it.
It was all your parents spoke about. It was all that you saw in the news. It was... Remember, the news would interrupt your Ben 10 of that day.
Siyafunda.
Yeah,
be interrupted.
Pia Via Buerta used to come on and I'd go like, Mom, who's that guy?
What's going on now?
Yeah. It was quite weird.
Like, imagine what you cannot imagine, Sia, is what a segregated South Africa actually meant. That every part of the life that people lived had this permeating air of separateness. So you couldn't be in certain places because you were black or white. You couldn't be with certain people because you were black or white. You could, and all of that really, I mean, they started relaxing a lot of those kinds of immorality things kind of in the late 80s. So some of those things had relaxed a little bit, but everywhere you went. So if you can imagine that there are people who went to universities that the only white people they came into contact with were some lecturers. That's it.
Yeah.
Everybody else on your campus. So if you went to Turfloop, for instance, everybody on the campus was black, and all the lecturers were Afrikaans. That's the kind of life that people lived.
Mm.
And you had to leave certain places by a certain time because your ID didn't allow you to be there beyond a certain time. So there was no way that you could escape the politics of the day, even as a small person, even as a young child. It was the life that you lived.
I do want to quickly talk about the Oscars because I don't know if anybody watched. Pumi says she watched some of it. Mm. Didn't some Japanese film win like everything?
Parasite. Yes.
Parasite.
Yeah, it got everything.
People are really saying it was well deserved. I
haven't seen this movie, have you?
No, I haven't either.
Yeah.
But to no surprise, Jojo Rabbit.
Jojo Rabbit, though, guys. Uh-huh. So everybody that came to the movie last week.
You now understand why. It got Best Adapted Screenplay. Yeah, 3 hours long, though. Oscars are still...
the Oscars are always so long.
Yeah, can't
You've
they?
You've got to be committed,
well,
man.
Well, apparently they put a big, a large mirror out on the stage, and that got a 6-minute standing ovation.
Gareth,
really? Just well done to everyone at the Oscars there.
I just watched Eminem's 8 Mile performance from the Oscars. I was a little surprised by why he was there and what it was for. It just seemed very random. It was like, okay, well, you haven't come up in conversation in quite a while, Eminem. Why are you there?
Neither has Renee Zellweger. Hasn't she won an Oscar?
No, Zellweger. No, supposedly her performance is really good as Judy Garland.
But like nobody has seen or heard anything about her for the past like 10 years.
Well, and it's
like,
also because she can't move her
out
face.
Out of the blue.
She can't move her face at all. Like Renee Zellweger is completely devoid of expressions. Since she had her 296th facelift. The woman is made entirely of plastic now. She is... Barbie doll has more human cells in it than Renee Zellweger. No, seriously, I saw her giving some kind of a speech this morning while I was looking at stuff for the show. She can hardly move her mouth.
You know, the times of...
It's very difficult for her to talk.
The times of good work are done. Joan Rivers, I feel like, had good work.
Do you think she had good work?
Yes.
I think she looked pretty awful. But
she looked awful, but
Jane
she was
Fonda
funny.
Jane Fonda had good work.
Jane Fonda.
That's some good
she gave
work.
She gave out the best director or the best movie Oscar to Parasite, but Jesus. She's in her 80s. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
It is.
So just listen to Renee Zellweger. You can actually hear... the mouth cracking as she starts speaking. Just listen to this. It's incredible. Let's take a listen to her quickly speaking. This is after she had got her award. She went and made a little speech about her Oscar and how much she appreciates getting the Oscar for Judy. She played the role of Judy Garland, and people were very excited by this. There's obviously lots of excitement.
Hello. With the red.
Hi. Yeah. Oh, fantastic.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
I loved you and Judy. I have to say this. I mean, absolutely amazing performance and amazing film.
Thank you.
So basically you became an extension of Judy in the film. It's almost like she transcended with you.
Oh, you imagine being the people who have to ask these questions. What a lot of hot steaming shit. This is her moment.
What I want to know is, how did you connect? What was it about Judy that connected you so closely by so and hard that you basically became her?
Oh, this person must be shot. This person who's asking the question makes Renee Zellweger seem interesting.
I know you've done a lot of research.
Oh, shut up and ask your question.
I'm her, essentially.
Right,
here she is. Now listen to her talk. You just try and make your mouth move this little. Okay? Yeah?
Really kind. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I can't think about it. I can't extract myself from the collaboration. The only things that I did by myself were sing in the car on the 405 in traffic, you know, for a year. So that was a lot of practice for anybody who's trying to drive down the 405.
Don't smile too much.
But
tear something.
Right, broke.
She sounds like an SNL skit now. She even looks like an SNL skit waiting to happen. Yeah.
It sounds like her cheeks are too heavy for her tongue. That's what it sounds like
bless.
To me. Yeah.
Oh, bless.
Don't have aunt.
Look, there were other moments as well, and I'm still going to be optimistic and say we're just going through a watershed moment and Hollywood just needs to reconfigure itself before we move on, and we'll see what the value is in a couple of years. But like Natalie Portman at the Oscars has been receiving a lot of attention for the outfit that she wore. So she wore this black and gold outfit, and it, on the jacket piece of her dress, embroidered in gold, were names of female directors she feels were not nominated and were snubbed by the Oscars. So for her, it was a statement. It was a political position that she took. And now people are saying, we respect your opinion, we get it, but hold up, Natalie Portman, you own a production company. You produced 11 movies so far.
Right.
You did not hire female directors. So before you start to point fingers at other people, how about you point fingers at yourself?
I love the way that some of the people who did whatever they had to do to Harvey Weinstein to get Oscars before are up there telling the rest of us how to behave now.
See, Hollywood has to reconfigure.
This stuff, man. Are we talking about the Obamas?
Where?
How, guys?
At the Oscars?
Yeah, bro. They've got a production company that won.
Oh, halala. No, I missed that.
Oh, is those two people, those are the two bald conehead people who went up to get awards? Is it them?
And the lady with the big hands. Michelle
Obama. Is that Michelle?
She's got massive. Well, it's like walking around with baseball gloves.
Are you talking about Michelle and Michael? I mean,
both of you, you can now walk into the corner.
She's never dropped a baby.
Were those two conehead people the Obama's directors? Is that them?
You guys.
Because I do remember there was someone up there who looked like they'd stepped out of the Conehead movie.
Oh,
is it them? Did they win something? The Obamas? Okay, listen to Brad Pitt. He couldn't wait to... how long has it taken Brad Pitt to win an Oscar? Years.
Yeah.
But here he is. He finally gets up there and he wastes his speech talking about John Bolton and the impeachment hearings.
Playing Cliff Booth, a skilled stuntman and the voting Tarantino-directed Best Picture nominee. Pitt beat out fellow nominees, including Al Pacino for The Irishman, Joe Pesci for The Irishman, Tom Hanks for A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, and Anthony Hopkins for The Two Popes. Pitt thanked Tarantino for being original and one of a kind, adding the film industry would be a much drier place without him, and had nothing but praise for his Once Upon a Time in Hollywood co-star Leonardo DiCaprio, saying he'd ride on his coattails any day. But before expressing his thank yous, Pitt couldn't help but take a moment out of his speech to take a jab at the Senate.
Thank you to the Academy for this honor of honors. They told me I only have 45 seconds up here, which is 45 seconds more than the Senate gave John Bolton this week.
This award marks Pitt's first Oscar.
Oh, you're so brave. Oh, so brave. Hollywood, so brave.
Can you name five of the biggest actors right now?
Those guys who just got nominated for those awards.
So, just five of the biggest actors. Who are they?
Al Pacino.
No. Like relevant right now.
Oh, now?
Yeah.
Joaquin Phoenix. He's got quite a lot of attention.
One.
No.
Can you name five of the biggest actors 15 years ago?
Sure. Jack Nicholson. Robert De Niro. Anthony Hopkins.
Mm-hmm.
Denzel Washington.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier. It's much easier.
Hollywood needs to close down.
I'm just
down. Really does.
These people must shut up. So just hang on. Did you find the Coneheads?
Yes, we did.
What are their names?
Stephen, Julia, and Jeff. They were the team who worked alongside the Obamas in creating American Factory. This was a documentary that was released on Netflix, and it won the Oscar for Best Documentary Feature. That's what Sizpumi was trying to say. And Gareth, I'm not one to...
But am I wrong?
Name call for the sake of name calling,
explain their look and tell me I'm wrong.
Yeah, Coneheads.
They look like Coneheads. Come on.
Look, no tea, no shade, but we have to call a thing a thing.
Yes.
We just have to be very honest about it. So the Obamas just keep on getting cooler. They're now Oscar winners. They're Grammy winners.
Yeah, well,
Hair also won. Hair.
Hollywood is in love with the Obamas. Hair also won. They're still.
The whole world is in love with the Obamas, man.
Watch them now.
I'm not.
Watch them now. Just create a theater production on their lives, and they'll be EGOT winners now.
Well,
the Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tonys.
But really, is it surprising? You know, it would be surprising if a movie that was not left wing won an award. If an actor said, "You know what? I quite like President Trump." That would be amazing. This stuff is totally predictable, and uninteresting in every possible way. So, what was the thing they won? The Coneheads. What was the thing? What was the category?
It's a documentary.
About what?
About American capitalism.
Oh, do me a favor. A guy's
surprise, surprise. There we go.
The film is about an Ohio autoglass factory that is run by a Chinese investor. And the documentary itself explores issues like the rights of workers, globalization and automation. And so the
American
film gives
capitalism.
This close-up look at how the cultures adjust to one another, and tensions rise when the factory doesn't initially meet production goals, and culminating in a bitter fight over the right to unionize.
Could have just shot it at Tesla's factory.
Well, while we're talking about unions, because unions are really stupid, let's listen to what our local union boss says. This is Tony Ehrenreich. Oh, no, listen to this. Kasatu Provincial Secretary Tony Ehrenreich said, Kasatu thinks it's a great idea that we use workers' pension funds to bail out Eskom.
The government endorses the idea about the rescue plan for Eskom. The unions endorse, the large part of the unions, the overwhelming majority endorse the plan. A big section of business endorses the plan. So we believe we have consensus. There are some who don't agree with the plan, and while we hope to get them on board, we can't let them sabotage the program that's needed in Eskom and the progress that's needed in the South African economy.
I want to get into that next point. Who is not endorsing this, and what are the reasons behind it?
Well, there's a section of business that has not endorsed it, and they're the same people who made money out of the huge losses that took place in the 2008 financial crisis. They're the same guys who lost 200 billion rand in Steinhoff and many other companies. So you got the crooks in the financial services sector in South Africa wanting to deny South Africa the rights to 5 or 10% of savings, retirement savings, to address the economic crisis in the country. And we're saying that that kind of short-sightedness that really excludes the majority of South Africans has no more place. But we also know there's a few unions who are opposed to it. And strangely enough, many of them are the conservative old white unions. They've always been insular, just looking after white workers' interests. And now they can't look at themselves to take care of the interests.
Tony, this is the guy, by the way, who wants to take people's savings, people's pensions. He has no right to this money at all. There's no Kasatu are not involved in the transaction these people have with their savings. None. But he's happy to co-opt their savings into his plan to save Eskom. I wonder if he should get an Oscar.
He's hard to listen to. I don't think he should get an Oscar.
No, I think so too. I think that's just
that guy is too much.
It's too much, right? What an asshole. Anyway, all right, so we'll leave him behind. And here is more from ENCA. This is now Kasatu, who wants workers' pension funds to bail out Eskom, and this is Melvin Brain. And
how many people are actually unionized Jonathan members?
Rustin, I know.
Some 1.9 million people, really.
In the total country, 1.9 million people are union members, and these guys want to take the money that is not theirs, that they have nothing to do with, from people who may not even be in the union, and they want to use it to bail out something that is an utter failure.
I mean, like,
you've got to ask yourself whether this is the kind of thing that we should even take seriously. But let's listen to them. Maybe they give a better Oscar speech than Tony Ehrenreich.
From Sato's point of view, we are very clear on that thing. We are saying to them, there's no blank check. What we mean by blank check, we want proper accountability. Number one, we want also for them to renegotiate the PPIs. We want them to renegotiate those coal contracts. We also want Eskom to investigate those people that have was involved in wrongdoing in the past, that they be charged and that they face a full matter of the law, and that we deal with them. But of course, we won't allow.
I can't. He's even worse than Tony Ehrenreich. But I thought you needed to hear it, so at least you know what's going on.
It's wild.
You know? Tony is a limp dick. This is according to Chris.
Ah, Chris.
He couldn't even hold on to the Western Cape, even when they handed it to him on a silver platter.
Wow.
Yeah.
That escalated very quickly.
I was deeply moved by that old couple you interviewed. Only managed to listen yesterday. Wow, what a love story. I couldn't help but wonder how their sex life is going. Must be lit.
Hi, man.
Must be lit.
Hi, man.
But what do people think? Old people stop having sex?
They do have
good
sex.
Good for them.
Yeah.
How? Guys.
84-year-olds, they came in here
don't
and
don't be so fascist.
I'm not fascist. Old people have sex all the time.
They must know, yeah. Good for them.
They have no consequences to their having sex either.
No consequence. Of course not.
It's all like breaking something.
Yeah.
Well.
Well, let's just be honest. Let's call a thing a thing.
Yeah, they could hurt themselves.
You could.
Something to think about. But what a beautiful story. And if you missed it, you can always go and listen to the podcast. This couple, Shirley and Leon, who met and then they separated for 60 years. They didn't see each other, but they were still in love. And then eventually they got back together again. In old age, and they held hands throughout the interview. It was beautiful.
Thinking about one another.
Imagine. Oh, before you could swipe left and right, there was these things, eh?
Now there's an idea.
What a time.
Someone should give that script to the Obamas, and they don't have to deal with shitty factory stories that no one's interested in. I mean, has anybody seen the American Factory? Anyone?
And it was on Netflix, hey? Which means we could have all. It's not like
crickets
standing up and going to a cinema.
Except like Netflix documentaries. You can't just wake up and watch a Netflix documentary. No. You have to properly invest yourself and you must be... I saw somebody tweeted that you have to be emotionally robust. You have to have one of those days. Yeah, true. Netflix documentaries, guys, they just... You know, it's not just a...
Look, they speak to how powerful the programming is. But right now, a lot of people are talking about the Aaron Hernandez documentary. And it's a 3-part series on Netflix.
I watched it after Mbulelo talked to us about Aaron Hernandez.
I sat down to want to watch it. I couldn't make it through the first 10 minutes.
Emotionally robust?
The title sequence alone. No. And then this is what got me, actually. One of the first scenes in the documentary is... footage from a helicopter following Aaron Hernandez driving in a white SUV.
Like yeah, OJ?
Like OJ, exactly.
What in the OJ Simpson is going on here? No, thank you. I'm still not over OJ. I can't get invested in something else.
We're flying over here. OJ is in the Bronco, the white Bronco.
It is exactly that. That's exactly how he is. He's driving like a... is that thing that is... He's driving a Q7 or something. Yeah. And it's like the... I can't.
I'm still not over OJ after so many years. Let me not get involved here. And then Aaron, there's like a clip of Aaron chatting to his mother from prison, and I just heard him say, "What? How did you expect I'd become? How did you expect I'd become? You raised me." I'm like, you know what? I have
you
my own
ruined
issues.
Me.
Yeah.
Ruined me. Yeah. You ruined me. He says, I'm just like,
"Wow, what a disaster!"
Said you I have ruined my own me? Issues.
He needed a black mother to come up at that prison and smack him on the side of his head. You ruined me. Lived rent-free inside of me for 9 months. I ruined you.
Now, that's a black mother. All of those white kids out there going, "Mom, I just need my personal time." Yeah, that's a black mother.
Personal time.
If this is not a great promo for that documentary, then I don't know what is.
But I'm telling you, Netflix documentaries, you can't just like right now they have a Who Killed Malcolm X. It's just like every time I'm just like Netflix, but why?
Yeah, that's a lot. So for me, earlier you brought up the building in New York that is struggling to get a tenant in Times Square. Well, here's some stats that we have about property in South Africa, particularly commercial property. So the South African Property Owners Association has just released their quarterly report recently. And this is just a general figure to chew on. 66 out of every 100 offices were fully let in South Africa. So we have about 34 offices out of every 100 that are completely empty. So I think...
Sorry, how many?
34. Let me phrase it this way. 34 in every 100 offices are empty in South Africa.
So that's 66% occupation.
Drive around. Drive down the road here and see how many to let signs.
I thought they were saying toilets.
can't down now. Almost 20% of the office space.
Advertising for toilets? I was like, yeah, well, we've got one. Thanks.
Out of almost 20% of office space in the Durban CBD, in Rosebank here in Johannesburg, and also Hatfield in Tswane, stood empty in the last quarter of 2019.
It's hectic. People are out here. There's a building just down the road from the studio here that actually has a huge sign outside saying, if you take up a lease, you can get up to 12 months free. So you have to take a long lease and you'll get a year. That's free rental.
Welcome. Welcome to the Ramaphosa economy.
Yikes. This report says Rosebank in particular has seen its vacancy rate spike as speculative developments come to market. So during the final quarter of 2019, Rosebank saw a 10% increase in its vacancy rate, which reached 17.9%. Now it makes me want to, like...
open an office.
No. I'm not going to put myself in.
If anyone had cash lying around, there might be speculative buying in the offing. Like if you had a lot of money lying around, which
but
nobody does.
But it'll take you a very long time to make it back, you may never make it back.
Yeah. There's probably safer places to put your money.
Is there maybe an optimistic side to this that people are like working in collaborative spaces, they don't feel the need for offices, they're working from home?
Tato just sent me a message to say he's getting ready for another interview today.
Good luck, Tato.
Yeah, he says, wish me luck. So, of course, we wish you luck.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it goes really well. You know, there are obviously less jobs. There are obviously less businesses that are taking up space or growing or hiring more people. So if you've got something like that on the cards in the next while, good luck to you. We hope it all works out.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, why waste it on overheads? You could be paying people. Maybe we can look at it like that, as businesses are going... stay at home, we'll pay you to work, you know, at a coffee shop. Things are changing. We have to adapt.
Yeah. On the upside, though,
keep overheads down.
Remote working is a big thing.
Yeah, keep overheads down and pay people.
On the upside, Pretoria is really booming. So looking at the CBD overall, it has a 92% occupancy.
Who would have known?
Possibly thanks to all of the government presence there as
probably,
well.
Probably, yeah.
But that's a major thing. So in keeping with the initial stat that I gave you, 34 buildings out of every 100 not being completely full, only 3 out of those 34 are completely, completely empty. So which leaves 31, which are sommer filled up, but 3 are in every 100 buildings in South Africa is completely empty.
Sure.
Yeah, let's...
So you can also buy up some residential property if you have money lying around at the moment. I mean, I don't know why I'm saying this, because no one has money lying around, but it's worth thinking about. And try to sell something now. You're not going to get any luck. I mean, apparently the sales numbers are just insane. In fact, you drive around neighborhoods like Bryanston. It's a lot for sale.
Mm.
You could buy some pretty good properties if you were an investor and a speculator in the market.
Yeah,
now.
You see a lot of for sale signs. And I'm asking myself, how many of those people are people who've left the country? But how many of those people are downsizing? Again, right, so those big houses, those huge houses in Bryanston and those areas, how many of those people are kind of going, yeah, you know what, I'd rather live in a townhouse or in a flat or in one of those kind of estate places. Because, the, you know, there's the overheads of a standalone house on like 3,000 square meters of prime real estate in Bryanston.
But having said that, I actually spoke to a friend who's an estate agent about that very subject, and he says one thing we must be conscious of is it's our first generation in Mandela, South Africa, that's retiring. So to your point, now that those guys are 60 watt, and you know, wealthy people don't often say, well, zanizohlala ekhaya, get out of my house. I'm selling this thing. I'm retiring. I'm traveling all year. That's what most people are doing.
Oh, wait, really? Is that a trend?
Yeah, no. Wealthy people, this notion that what most wealthy people want their kids to live off them is nonsense. They don't, from the ones I've been exposed to and from what I've seen, get out of my house. I've given you university, now go work. And then they're living their best life. Like you're saying, downsize. you get a small apartment, and you travel the world.
And also, it is a trend amongst millennials who don't see owning property the way that the older generation did. So fewer of them are buying property. They'd rather rent or be able to be free.
So they could travel and go and do other things.
Lock up and go is a big thing for a lot of people. So those big properties are just...
Where do you think people are putting their money these days then? Because I hear that statement all the time, like, millennials are not buying. And I don't think it's a choice.
They're
like,
spending it.
Yeah, they're traveling.
Yeah, they're spending every cent.
But also, millennials are earning less.
Then basically, we have no money.
But also, millennials are the first generation
to be poorer
than their... So they're earning less than their parents earned. So they're not as rich as their parents are. They don't keep their phone numbers.
It's because of global warming.
Hey, do you want to hear?
We change phone numbers.
So Elizabeth Warren went to visit an old age home, hoping for some votes.
Oh,
you know,
Lord.
she's still trying to prop herself up. Bernie Sanders has stolen most of the ground from her, and that's because he's worked harder. But here she is. She walks into an old age home, and this is the reaction.
Is that a real thing?
No, it's real. She's walking around, and these old people
just ignore her.
They're playing bingo or whatever, and they are so disinterested that she eventually just turns and walks out.
But old people don't have that kind of attention span, man.
Also, I just want to say microaggression there, a bit of ageism, presuming that old people just play bingo. I was a bit triggered there.
Those old people are playing bingo.
They are actually playing bingo.
Mbulelo. I'm looking at the video,
Mbulelo. You, Mbulelo. Looking for trouble.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Pumi. Julius says he's going to occupy Johann Rupert's property. I think the EFF threatened this once before. Do you know how it was dealt with?
Oh.
Everyone ignored them.
Yes, mostly, except Johann Rupert also, I think, called up all his friends in the taxi association there, which he supports, and they said to the EFF, if you come, we will kill you. So nobody came.
Shame. I feel so sorry for Julius. I really do. Because they've got one trick, right? They've got one trick and they've played it. So the disruption of the Sona thing, they've played it and it doesn't create as much attention anymore. Also, because they banned journalists, right? So they then, after like sending out this blitz message, right, their press conference nobody's interested in their press conference.
Mm.
So no, you didn't even know they had a press conference on Sunday, right? So you don't even know what they said. What?
No.
No, because nobody's covering their stuff. So now they've painted themselves into this corner. They've only got one trick. They're just shame. It's waning, it's terrible. Yeah. It's terrible.
Our friend, they will
have peaked at 44 people in parliament.
Our friend Kais Tole, who's been in before a number of times, said, I'm scared to fall in love, afraid to love so fast, because every time I fall in love, it seems to never last, quoting that from a song. But I think a lot of people are thinking about love with Valentine's Day coming up. So what is the appropriate thing in 2020? Are we still doing dates and flowers and dinners, or have we changed that up as well?
I'll take it.
Or do you now swipe up on Tinder, and up means you get a little bit of love instead of just a hookup?
You'll take a date. You're picking it like something on the shelf. I'll take one of those, please. Yeah, I'll take
it. Do you think we've lost the ability to be romantic, Pumi? Let's just for a second park all the serious social and political and Oscar and coronavirus news, and let's just look at this. Do you think we have lost the ability to be romantic? When you see young people trying to interact with each other, do you feel sorry for them? Do you feel that they are moving faster than you can, and that maybe they're leaving people behind? What's going on? I want some serious sage advice from you now, Pums.
Oh, the pressure of it all.
Go on, Lothario.
She's not Lothario.
What?
That's Lothario.
Do you just love the sound of it?
I do think you just like the word.
It's one of our favorite
words. It's not an appropriate
description. It's not appropriate. It's not appropriate, Sia.
You know who's a Lothario? Like... Harvey Weinstein without the sexual misconduct.
Ah, no, it fits.
If he thought he was better. All right, go, Pums. What do you think? Seriously, about romance. Is it over?
I think it's different. I think it's different. I don't think the concept of romance can die. I think it looks different for different people. So the old couple you had here, their idea of romance looks very different from what Sia. You know, Sia sees his romance in the nudes.
Sorry, I wasn't expecting that, but it is true.
So, really, Sia, how do you think romance feels and works in 2020?
Can I just turn this around a little? Spumi, do you think it's romantic, for example, to pick someone up at the airport?
Ah.
Okay, great question.
You know, it's changed, right?
Pick someone up how? Like...
Your significant other's arriving at the airport and you haven't seen them in a while. Do you think it's romantic to pick them up? Or rather, would you just,
let them get
Uber
on the car train?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's romantic.
Thank you.
Okay. To collect someone, you know, like, okay, I haven't seen you in a long time.
Thank you.
So excited. Here I am. Bring flowers. Yay.
Yes. Yes. She has the whole scene at arrivals. Yes.
Wow. So you think that's a romantic, but that shouldn't be a Valentine's date.
No. But romance should not and must never be relegated to just one day. Romance is also in the everyday small things, right? It's in the everyday small things. So I've had a crappy day, you know, and if I tell you I've had a crappy day via WhatsApp or whatever during the course of the day, like, bring chocolate home.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Like,
light some candles, ambiance nyana, by the time you get home to relax.
Yeah, well, we don't all go have so to far light as the candles. For home, but like, it's those little things. You know?
See, it's not romantic.
No, that
at
is
all.
A standard feature. We all have to light candles because of Eskom. So.
Yeah, so it's like. Sometimes other people's like romance, you've seen like my 600-pound life, right? Other people's idea of romance is like feeding you.
Where is this going?
No, like other people make you food all the time, right?
Sure.
If you don't know, if you have no boundaries like Sia and you don't know when to stop, it can get like out of hand. But other people play you music. Other people collect you from, and it's not just one day. It's like little things all the time. It's actually, romance is in paying attention.
Yes.
So if you send, don't blue tick me.
Ah. So is, in your opinion,
respond.
I like how where you've gone. Is romance important, would you say? Do we need it as a function, singabantu, or should we just forget about romance, get to work? No, I'm asking. I mean, that's a...
You will never get laid.
No, I'm asking.
With that kind of attitude in life. Now it all makes sense.
Yeah.
This is why you're so angry
what
all the time.
What is the show? What is the show?
Mbulelo.
Yeah.
Come on, give a little bit
I'm asking a question. Like, I know people who don't think romance is important.
Do you think it's important?
I think it has a role to play, yeah, for sure.
You seemed half-assed about
that.
If I have to. Look, you are right. It is the little things that make a world of a difference. I was seeing this guy last year, and I wasn't even planning on it being serious, but then he invited me over to his house, and he has a sound system around his whole apartment.
Yeah.
I was just walking in, minding my own business, and he had paid attention, using your words, which are true. He had paid attention to what I had mentioned in our conversations. When I arrived, he said, "I created a playlist for you."
That's quite special.
Take me now, Jean-Pierre. Take me now. Yo. It's like, is someone making a mixtape for you in the 90s and they gave that to you?
That's quite cute. You see, this is what Pumi was saying, though. It is the small day-to-day stuff. Like, it's make sure I've got some chocolate if I've had a bad day. It's put a little playlist together so you can make me feel better. And do plan the occasional big thing, but also the little things. Like, you know, let me go and do the shopping today. How about I make dinner? Or you put a little flower in a little vase waiting on the table when she gets home.
Yeah, romance is about being seen. All people want is to be seen and acknowledged. And when you pay attention to the small things, then a person feels seen. I
see,
feel
See, you don't have to be putting Rohypnol in her drink, his drink every night and you know, making them wake up in a stupor. That's not how it works.
Thank you. I will take that note.
And Mbulelo, you are cold as ice, and that comes from someone who knows.
Mm.
You are yeah. Pumi's right. You are never going to get laid.
Yeah, maybe.
And maybe there's a girl out there who is quite content on ignoring you all the time, and yeah. just, you know, then the two of you can like,
it's just carnal.
Can be in your like carnal bliss, yeah. ignoring each other, except for in those moments.
Perhaps one can only dream. Mm. One can only dream that I can be ignored and then just.
I just don't know how you'd find each other, but anyway.
Yeah,
it's a story for another.
We'll cross
day.
That bridge. Yeah.
Probably. Look, I have an update on the winner of the Powerball that you were referencing earlier. But before that, do you want to talk about your bunch of winners for this week, Mbulu?
Yeah, sure. Let's do it. Let us get to it. This is a pretty special one as well.
Okay, all right, let's go. Waste no time.
Let's get to it.
So this we know guy, about he designed something for Michael Schumacher back in the day.
Yeah, he certainly did. So we know by now we don't do modesty, mediocrity is where the human soul goes to die. I've heard before, so I don't believe in mediocrity, and I love South Africans who've done great things. So in 1991, the racing company Benetton made a decision that would change the face of motorsport forevermore.
Mm-hmm.
They had some German kid called Michael driving for them. But then they got this Flavio Briatore guy, who is the biggest douchebag in the world, by the way. But I love him. Yeah. I absolutely love Flavio. If you don't know him, go and Google him. But Flavio employed a Wits University educated chemist, and he put together, unknowingly, a duo that would change Formula One and everything it has become today. In 92, Benetton, the company, they were 73 points off the Constructors' Championship. In 93, 96 points off it. In 94, however, they were 15 points off the Constructors' Championship, but that Michael kid I told you about at 25 won his first driver's title. The very next year, Michael won the driver's title, Benetton won the Constructors' title, and that's important for the man I'm talking about, and I don't really want to bore you about the details, but there was a transition, right? This gentleman retired in 96 until the top brass at Scudero Ferrari pulled him out of retirement in Thailand, and at the behest of Michael, said you need to return, and I'll save you the heartache and wondering. The Michael guy is Michael Schumacher. Garrett already mentioned that.
Sorry, I spoiled your little reveal.
Oh. Yeah, it's okay. That's okay.
But it is. Yeah. This is a big deal.
Yeah, and we'll get to why it's a big deal. This Schumacher guy obviously went on with Ferrari, and 5 years they went back to back. He won the title. They won the constructors' title from 2000 to 2004, and Schumacher went on to credit this man that I'm talking about for everything that happened. Everything that happened in his career, if you go and read his books, he says, this is the man who changed it all for me, both at Benetton and at Ferrari.
Wow.
And I don't want to bore you too much with the details if you're not into Formula One, but our bunch of winner human for today is the greatest designer. He hasn't won the most constructors' titles, but he changed Formula One at the most rapid rate. He had a famous saying called evolution, not revolution. His name, Rory Byrne, the greatest chief designer, Formula One and motorsport has ever seen. One of our very own, born in Jacarandaville, Pretoria.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Okay, well, there's a guy.
Rory Byrne.
Made a massive impact on the world.
Legend.
Terrific.
Another person we can gloat about.
Now, let's talk about this woman who Sia is very similar to in terms of personality. She won the lotto, which we're just waiting for Sia to do, because now we know for sure, after he told us that he is not getting his old phone number back, we know for sure that if he won the lottery, he would never talk to any of us
How
again.
How many times have I said it, folks?
Absolutely.
I said, if I ever get to Bora Bora on a yacht, delete my number. I was saying, and I'm not joking.
But this woman won the lottery.
There's no 5G on in
and
Bora
Bora.
And
she says she can't wait to buy, because, you know, people always give very sensible answers. Like, oh, I'm going to invest most of the money, and I'm going to take a small amount every month as a salary, but I'm going to carry on with my normal life, blah, blah. This woman said, hell no.
Nobody says that.
She said, well, they all say it to the cameras.
Mm.
She said she's going to buy a sports car and she's going to drive really slowly past her ex's house so that he can see her sports car.
I want to be friends with her.
She's going to wave to him. Yeah. She can't wait to wave
with the roof
to
down.
Him.
I want to be friends with her. Really not because now she has money, but, you know, I just feel like we're kindred spirits. This is what we know about her so far. She's 35 years old. She lives in Soweto, and she won 114 million rands in the Powerball jackpot. Powerball jackpot. pot. There we go. She was on her way to work. She saw this long queue of people with slips and she thought, okay, clearly there's some big hype about this. Meanwhile, she's actually the winner.
That's when she bought the ticket.
Initially, yes, with the 5 rand. Sorry, yes. She only spent 5 rands to buy this ticket. And this is more of her backstory. At a point, she couldn't even afford to rent a back room in Soweto.
She's got 4 kids.
4 children who didn't even live with her. They were staying with her mother. And so now she says, with this money, she's already quit her job. She wants to be more involved in her children's everyday life. And
what's the bet the kids also suddenly want to be with mom? Rich mom. They're like, we didn't love
cheers,
you before.
Gogo, cheers.
Yeah, bye-bye, Gogo. But thanks for looking after us. Gogo's like,
She is building a house for her mom, though, she said.
She's buying her own house. She's building her mother a big house so that she can live comfortably. And then this comes to the notes of the story, being the fact that 35-year-old woman from Soweto doesn't even have a driver's license.
Yes, baby, yes.
To complete this vision of hers.
No, she... This
but
woman,
for now.
So basically,
she's motivated though to get now, that license.
She's quit her job. Okay. Now I don't know what she did for a living. But
I think she was like a general worker.
Yeah, they just say she's a blue collar worker.
So, but she's quit her job. Now she's going to live off this money, mm-hmm. and she's going to build some great future for herself. But up to now, she hasn't been able to do very much with her life, including not look after the 4 children that she's had, or get a driver's license. And she wonders why her life up to winning the jackpot was a disaster. I will make an ugly prediction that no one's going to like me saying, but this woman is going to end up poor again in about 10 years' time because of the life decisions that got her to this point, this stage of life.
That's not an ugly prediction. Those are the statistics.
It's the truth.
Have you not seen I Blew It?
Yeah.
And this
poor mother of hers should have got the money because the mother's the one who's been looking after the kids. The mother would know how to be responsible with that money. Mm. She could drive her sports car past her ex's house as much as she likes. It's not going to make her feel better.
Up and down and up and down. This is just because she...
And I'm delighted that finally the money was won by someone who didn't have a lot. Because that's usually a much nicer story than if someone has some money and then they win the job. Yeah, what difference does that really make?
Yeah. She fully admits herself, though, that this ex that she wants to rub it in the face of broke up with her because she was broke and she didn't have a fancy job, she says. So now she can't wait to drive past her ex, saying that he'll probably faint when he sees me waving at him.
You know what I'd do? I love her approach. I would get Gweta Mantashe and the boys. And you know, have you ever seen an ANC-style convoy? I don't think people know how these things are done. Proper. I'd get one of those jackets.
The green and black leather.
But I wouldn't be wearing it in my Bentley that I'm driving by. I'd stop by his house, and then I'd get out, and I'd make Gweta put the ANC jacket on me outside his house.
But why Gwed?
No, because he's the member. You've seen him. He's right now. He's the guy.
Why Gwed?
Because he's the most vile human. You know.
Ace is now the Secretary General. Ace is the guy.
No, but I want Gwed has got some personality and he's closer. You gotta have the winning team.
So Gareth, to your point, actually, I'm surprised to find out that for any winning over the amount of 50,000 rands, Ituba, which is the body that owns the lotto, gives the winner free trauma counseling and financial advice. So they actually took this woman away. They treated her to a 5-star hotel stay here in Gauteng, where they were giving her this trauma counseling and financial advice. Let's see if it works or not. Let's see. But if we're talking about bitter exes and pettiness, I think this is a fun note to end off the show on. If you are bitter, as Valentine's Day is coming up, perhaps you need to contact the San Antonio Zoo. For $25 US, up to $25 US, you can splurge on buying a variety of things. For example, for $5 for a cockroach, up to like $25 US for a fluffy rodent. You name it after your ex, and you can watch them feed that cockroach to a rodent, to one of the bigger animals. That is just a petty level on a whole other note. So yeah, these cockroaches are offered to like birds and reptiles at the zoo. And so in the spirit of just feeling very spiteful on Valentine's Day, you can spend some money.
That's good.
And the San Antonio Zoo is calling this campaign "Cry Me a Cockroach."
Oh no!
Shana, I think that's cute to adopt some poor animal at the zoo, but I think
you're really adopting it because it won't get eaten.
The best present I've seen, and Valentine's Day is coming up. And if you are bitter like this woman who won the lotto about your ex, you can always send them a chocolate dick, and then tell them eat a dick, or you can get them a whole bag of dicks. Come on.
Just five. Here are five short stories of some very petty people who have ended relationships. So, number one, here's a person who, when they broke up, they were actually getting a divorce. They took their blender but left all of the attachments.
Excellent.
Petty.
I know someone who went into her husband's cupboard and she took all his left shoes. And yeah. She burnt them. And she left just the right shoes. That is some vicious shit. And I think it's hilarious. I know another woman who put a snake in the post box.
No.
That sounds
like
right.
Like you
to
know
me.
This person.
Yeah. That sounds right.
Horrible
to me.
People.
Know this person.
Not as a friend, but I know.
But you, yeah.
I've actually met them.
Wow.
No, they're insane.
I wonder what the guy did. That's hectic. A snake
in the post box.
Here's another petty person. So in college, my boyfriend dumped me.
Just shaking her head.
In college, my boyfriend dumped me 2 days before my birthday. Little did he know that his friends were throwing a huge surprise party for me at his house. He sulked in his room the whole time and he didn't come out.
How
while
did
the party
he not know this? That relationship sounds rocky from the get-go. Yeah. Like, how do you not know your friends are throwing a party for your girlfriend at your house? Like, come on now.
Two last petty stories. Here's one saying, my boyfriend's ex-girlfriend cut open an oversized panda bear he had gotten for her. He took out all of the stuffing just so that he can wear the skin of the bear.
That sounds very creepy as well.
And then this probably to me gets the top prize of pettiness.
This is what Sia is going to employ next time he breaks up with someone. Go on. I know you're going to do this.
A woman found out that her husband had been cheating on her. Mm-hmm. Instead of confronting him, and clearly this is a man of a particular age, she kept quiet and just emptied out his liquid form of an erectile dysfunction product. Mm-hmm. So you sip it and it helps you with your erectile dysfunction. Instead, she just spilt all of that out and replaced it with some water solution. So this guy was probably drinking this, ready to go out and cheat, and then nothing was happening, and she was sitting at home, twiddling her thumbs, going, ha-ha!
And he could not perform.
He could not.
Beautiful. No, that's
levels
good.
Of pettiness. Vicious. Some inspiration if you want to be bitter for Valentine's Day. Well,
you know what?
Don't do it, guys. Don't do it. Just love yourself.
Just
love yourself, man.
There's no need to be. Sia, you can be
don't
as vicious as you want. The
don't
rest
let
of us
Sia.
Won't.
Don't let Sia mislead you down this petty path.
The least I'm going to do is Google the San Antonio Zoo for Cry Me a Cockroach. What's $5? Almost $60.
Rather buy a bag of dicks, I'm telling you. Give someone that as a present for Valentine's Day. They will leave you alone. Sia, we need to find out how to get these people who irritate you out of your life. Mm-hmm. We need to send them all bags of dicks. You and I are going to go online now and we're going to buy some. All right? Yes, we are. All right, everybody. Have a happy day. We will see you tomorrow between 6 and 8 o'clock. Be good. CliffCentral.com